Hello, and welcome to the TV Movie Rewind Podcast with Matt and Todd.
Hi, everyone.
Today, we are doing a really fun little sci-fi horror exploitation movie called Chopping Mall. Chopping Mall is a fantastic title, but not for this movie.
No.
Chopping Mall sounds like the title for, you know, I mean, this does take in place. It is a kind of a horror movie.
Yeah.
It does take place in a shopping mall.
It's arguably slasher-esque, but if the killer was like a Jason or a Michael type, then Chopping Mall makes all the sense of the world.
Chopping Mall sounds like there should be some, like, big psychopath with an axe
mass killer
chopping up people in a mall.
Yeah.
This is about the mall security robots going haywire and
killing it, you
killing
might say.
The cast in the mall overnight.
Yeah.
And the original title was Killbots, so that's probably what they should have stuck with.
Well, and also in the opening title credits, the effects Jim Short, I think his name was, but it's credited as, you know, Killbots by. So they're still called Killbots in the opening credits, and that's the better title. It makes more sense. I assume Chopping Mall was because of, you know, all the, you know, because slasher movies had a huge resurgence at the time with all of the latter Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street's and Halloween's. I mean, we're talking like, you know, the fifth and sixth of these franchises. So.
Well, I'll tell you, if I was flipping through, you know, Netflix or whatever the streaming service was looking for something, and I narrowed it down to a movie called Chopping Mall and a movie called Killbots, I would pick Chopping Mall. I will admit to that. Chopping Mall is an awesome title. It just doesn't really fit the movie.
Chopping Mall is a bit more of a punchier title than Killbots. But, I mean, ultimately, I'd watch both. You know what I mean? I'd be flipping a coin. I'd be like, which one am I watching now? Because I'm certainly going to watch both.
This is a Roger Corman production, of course. However, his daughter, Julie Corman, was really the producer and in charge of getting the movie made. The director was Jim Reinorsky, who has done a ton of work for Roger Corman and a lot of low budget exploitation studios.
I think it's some of his stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. This stars, I would definitely say the star of the movie is Kelly Maroney.
Yep.
Who,
good to see her again.
Most people will know her from Night of the Comet.
Sure.
Which just shows she should stay out of shopping malls.
Yeah.
She always runs into some sort of horrible trouble when she goes into one. And I would say the other co-lead is Tony O'Dell, who most people will recognize as the, I should have looked up the character's name, but he was in all five seasons of Head of the Class. He played, you know, he played the most college, almost the Alex Keaton character, you know, the very preppy
Alan,
you know, Alan, very
Alan
serious
Pickard,
girl, student. And then we have littered throughout the cast, we have cameo appearances by Paul Bartel and Mary Warrenoff, both veterans of Roger Corman Productions, and here they're basically playing their characters from Eating Raoul. They're in the audience. The movie opens up with a demonstration of these new security robots that will be patrolling the mall overnight, being the security for this very high-end shopping mall, which a lot of people will recognize from Commando.
Yep.
They did some of the filming of this movie in the mall where they had the Commando sequence, where he beats up just about. That's why they had to get robots, Todd.
Yes. Yes, because they saw what happened when Arnold Schwarzenegger rampaged
through their security guards.
Yeah. It would explain the weaponry they display for, you know, protecting televisions.
Yes. Yes. They were like, if one guy could take out our entire security force, we need robots.
Yeah.
I am now officially saying this movie takes place in the same continuity as Commando.
100%. Because, yes, it would definitely explain, it would explain these, why these robots were created and their capabilities. I more like recognize them all in that while this looked really familiar, I'm sure I had seen it before, but I should have, but didn't pick up on on Commando, but then, as soon as you see the elevator, it's like, oh yeah, this is the Commando.
I guess they filmed in a couple of malls, the
Oh, really?
Commando Mall being amongst them, and then a lot of them were filmed at probably, on studio as well,
Sure.
just to probably save money and,
Yeah.
get the filming done
Not
faster.
tear up a mall and not have to spend money to, be in a mall when it's operating or even overnight. Yeah. That makes sense.
So yeah, the movie opens up with the guy demonstrating these robots with the film to, I assume, either investors in the mall or people who own stores in the mall or whatever. And it shows, an armed robber running amok in the mall and the robots, using stun weaponry to incapacitate them. Because that's like, and it's not mentioned in the cut we watched. We did find out the cut we watch is the original cut. It's 106, sorry, it's 76 minutes. It's
It's
a
very short.
really quick movie, but it entertains you from the opening seconds to the ending
Yeah,
seconds.
very quickly paced.
There is an extended cut, and I wonder if in that cut it's another one of those, well, we built these robots for military use, and
Yeah.
the funding was cut, so now we're going to have to sell them to. We got to find some way to sell these things.
Yeah. Yeah, like you need to be in the right mindset to enjoy this movie. If you're a fan of especially like the later 80s slasher movies, where it's more about like the inventive ways to display your special effects, and not to say there's absolutely no story here, but if that's really what you're going for, then yeah, this movie will be up your alley. I mean, you're not going to learn much, but you're going to have fun.
It's basically the horror movie version of Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Johnny Five is alive, and soon you won't be.
They do have like a short, the
So,
robots do definitely have like a short circuit kind of vibe to them. Yeah, they're not quite as cute,
it's the.
but
No, actually, they're really cool looking
they are. Yeah, they're
robots.
well done.
They are menacing looking and all that. And much like Short Circuit, a lightning strike is what overloads them and basically turns them murderous. Now, normally, since there wouldn't be anybody overnight in the mall, the robots going murderous, well, they kill the two technicians that are in the robot control room. So those two guys would have been, killed. But the reason there's victims in the mall for them to stalk overnight is that there's eight, I don't want to call them kids. I think they're supposed to be, I think they're
I think
supposed
they're
to be
supposed to be
college
teenagers.
students. Well, they are, because obviously they are, just like any movie, the actors are older
Five or
than the
six years
characters are
older.
playing.
Yeah.
But two of them are married. So I want to
Are
say
they?
these are college students.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I didn't pick.
the two that show up that don't work in the mall, they show up.
They sh
The brunette
Yeah.
girl, they're married.
Well, I also didn't realize. Okay, all right, yeah. But I mean, I didn't really even. Okay, they're in the movie, but I didn't really necessarily. Okay, I just figured they were older than the others, but I was looking at the others as teenagers.
What it would be weird for them to be hanging out if they weren't really kind of all the same age.
What? I thought. Yeah, I guess.
I really get the impression that they're college, whether they're, sophomores in college or whatever, would explain mostly why they can be out all night and, not have to be, they all work at the mall except for, like I said, the two that are married. But there's this whole bit where Tony O'Dell is the nephew of a guy who owns a furniture store in the mall, and two of his co-workers, convince him, like, oh, you're closing tonight, so why don't we all, we're going to invite our girlfriends over, and we got a girl for you, and the eight of us can party overnight in the furniture store. And they secure Kelly Mulroney, who's French. She works at a pizza place with the character played by Barbara Crampton, who everybody will know from Reanimator. And if not from Reanimator, then from Beyond. They work together in the pizza store, and it's a whole this whole thing of like, yeah, come on, you'll come with us, and you'll meet, Tony Odell and you guys will hit it off, and you know we'll have this party.
It's the beginning of like every slash movie of the time. There's always like the one girl who's like, "Oh, come on," or guy, you know. There's always the one that's getting fixed up.
It becomes obvious that, you know, this is all for them to, you know, hook up and have sex. Right. So either they have, and that's why I'm thinking colleges, maybe they all have dorm mates and, you know, roommates or whatever. So this was their chance to, you know, get it on, as it were.
Sure.
So again,
I'm just always used to it being teenagers. So maybe I just assumed they were, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It doesn't affect the movie one way.
Not really. I mean, they could very well. They're mid 20s either way. But whatever they're portraying doesn't really matter.
Right. Well, but again, it would also explain why two of them are married.
Sure, sure. But I didn't even pick up on that. I didn't even realize they were married.
Yeah. So, almost immediately, you know, it's all very quick. We establish who the characters are. You know, they're all at their little jobs and who's dating who and who's with who. And, you know, oh, we're going to hook up Kelly Maroney and Tony Odell. We're going to have a great time and we're going to be there. I guess the plan wasn't to stay there all night. I guess there's a few hours after the mall closes before it's like really locked up.
Yeah, presumably you figure like all of like the services who are cleaning everything need time to clean after everybody's left, and then they leave, and then it's really locked up. Yeah,
because after the robots, you know, after the lightning strikes and the robots kill the two technicians, they go out on patrol, and who's one of the first people they encounter?
Walter Paisley.
Walter Paisley, played by
Dick Miller.
Dick Miller.
Yeah.
Who is, of course,
podcast veteran
my Whip-Pistle Award for this episode. Again, showing he has no luck when encountering robots. He's a janitor at the mall, and he's, you know, cleaning, he's mopping something up, and, you know, we briefly see two of his fellow janitors making fun of him, you know, mocking him because they're leaving and he's still got to finish mopping up this mess. And he's like, oh, you'll see, I'll be out of here in just a few minutes. And sure enough, one of the robots comes along and is, you know, asks for his ID, and he shows him the ID, but it also knocks over his mop bucket, which angers, you know, of course, like, now I got a bigger mess to clean up. So he's yelling at the thing and he's telling it it's, you know, worthless. He knew there were going to be trouble when they were involved, but basically these robots are going to go Ed 209 before Ed 209.
Right.
And
only Ed 209 was specifically developed as a combat bot in, like, you know, a super rough town where, like, violence was rampant and gang members had, like, 50 caliber rifles and stuff.
Again, I wouldn't be surprised to find out that was the intention for these robots.
Yeah, except they don't really say that. I mean, it's a little bit different.
No, but
it's quite different from one of my recommendations for this, and probably one of yours as well, is Class of 1999, right? There are some parallels there, but the main difference
it
with class
absolutely is
the main difference with Class of 1999 is it was established how dangerous the area was, and that these teachers were expected to be like combat robots. Whereas in this, it's just, you know, mall security.
Well, and again, because he's all wet from the mop bucket being knocked over and he's standing in a huge puddle, the robot launches the taser at him. And so that could be like, you could at first like, oh, well, that's, you know, the robot didn't mean to kill him and only meant to tase him.
Right. And the two technicians are killed by their, like, presumably really strong claws, which, okay, fine.
Yes.
So far, so good. Yep.
So now we get the typical scene of, you know, we see the three of the couples hooking up and getting into bed. And, you know, we get some, you know, gratuitous nudity, which is always welcome.
Expected, yeah.
And what's really clever about this is that, like we said, the Tony Odell character and the Kelly Maroney character were being set up on a blind date.
Yeah.
And, you know, and really they're being used as like the excuse for everybody else to be there to get together.
Right. They're their wingmen who's like, you have to come or else I can't, type of thing. Yeah.
Right. But what's great and what really helps this movie work is they actually hit it off.
Yeah, they have some sparks, yeah.
normally you would see these two characters put together and they'd be all awkward or they wouldn't like each other and they'd be like, oh, they just set me up with you. Now, while everybody else is, of course, they're sitting, everybody else is having sex, they're sitting watching a movie.
Right. And the impression that I get, and this is actually, you know, clever for the movie, is like the initial hesitation from either Tony Adello or Kelly Maroney was like, look, I know what you guys are like. And if you're saying like he's one of you or she, you know, like, I don't know. Right. But I think they work because neither of them are all that much like their friends.
Right. But it's all very sweet.
It is. Yeah.
It really is.
It's very well done, actually.
It would work if this was a teenage romantic comedy.
Right.
And Tony Odell and Kelly Maroney both do an excellent, you know.
Yeah, good chemistry.
You know, he keeps offering, like, you know, if you want me to take you home, I can take you home right now. She's like, no, I'm enjoying myself. Let's finish watching the movie.
Right.
So they're all locked in. And another one of the points is the robots are only being supposed to be patrolling the mall itself, not inside the stores.
Right, because they're all closed down.
Yeah.
They're all like, you know, whatever, yeah.
So one of the couples, played by John Terleski and Susie Slater, you know, after they had sex, she wants a cigarette and she sends him out to the cigarette machine outside the store to get her some cigarettes. And I just want to mention John Terleski was, despite him being the first one of this group to be killed off, I guess he was originally cast to be one of the hero, not the Tony Odell hero, but the guy, the married couple guy.
Oh, okay.
And he would actually later go on to make another movie with Jim Wynorski. He would be Deathstalker in Deathstalker 2.
Oh, really?
So okay. He gets to go on to be, you know, a barbarian, a sword and sorcery character.
Okay.
And unfortunately, here he goes out into the mall to buy cigarettes and is killed by one of the robots.
Deathstalker, is that Cabot?
No, that's Outlaw of Gore.
Outlaw of Gore, okay.
So he's the first victim, and he's also, you know, he's usually the type of character he's playing here usually is going to be he's the kind of the cocky, he's always snapping gum.
Yeah.
He's the guy that actually is picking on the Tony Odell character a little bit.
He's that guy. Yeah.
Whereas the other guy, Greg, is obviously more of a actual friend.
Right.
He's Tony Odell.
Yeah.
So he's electrocuted, and after a few minutes, Susie Slater, getting a little tired of waiting for her cigarettes, goes out looking for him. And she finds his dead body, and she immediately starts being pursued by one of the security robots, which now shows that he has, like, another power where he can fire lasers.
Yes.
From his, you know, his visor. And at first, the lasers just seem to be, you know, almost like another ow. Kind of stun
right.
type of thing.
Kind of like, you know, oh, hey, ow.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oh, this hurts. Yeah. This stings. I don't care for this.
Right.
She gets back to the store. They hear her screaming as she's running back to the store. So they all go to the store windows to see, like, what's the problem? And just as she gets there, the laser beams go from mildly irritating to explode the girl's head.
Yeah, it's a pretty gnarly effect too. It's well done.
This is the standout kill of the movie.
For
this
sure.
is
yeah.
the yeah. This is what it would obviously be in all the advertising and obviously it's a tribute to another mall-based horror movie, Dawn of the Dead, that has that outstanding exploding head effect.
Yeah, surprisingly early into the movie, but it does set the tension of what the rest of the movie is going to be. It sets the stakes. From like,
the
we just have to avoid their mildly annoying, you know, tasers and lasers, and we'll be fine.
I mean, this movie is loaded with homages to The Terminator, yeah. Deadly Friend, Dawn of the Dead, Short Circuit. you know, there's all sorts of little, you know, homages to all these even Westworld. Obviously, it's an homage to Westworld as well.
Sure, they're almost. I mean, maybe it's because we've been watching a lot of Doctor Who lately, but they're almost Daleks in a way. They don't quite speak Daleks, but it's, you know, they're Dalek-ish, I say.
At one point, when the robots are both, two of the robots are together shooting their lasers, the effect is straight out, the sound effect is straight out of George Pal's War of the Worlds.
Right on.
It's that same sound effect for the lasers. And before the first guy is killed, he even references the day the Earth stood still with Klaatu.
Yes, Klaatu Varadaniktu, yep.
Yes.
He says that as he's holding his badge, like, you know, because he works there, right? And the robot's like, I need to see your identification or whatever. Yeah.
This movie is not trying to pretend it's anything, you know, other
than what it is. Yes.
Than what it is. And it's showing all its influences. And that's what makes it more genuine than, you know, movies. Like, that's why I will say it's homage and not ripoff.
Yeah, no. And it helps, like, it really does help. It does help the movie along. It helps set the tone of what you should be expecting. And it sets the entertainment level, which is, you know, I think all of it works.
So our six remaining characters, you know, see her head explode and then the robots turn and start shooting lasers at them. So they immediately know this is a situation here.
Yep.
And as the robots storm the store, they try to make it out through the back. They make it like into the back of the store, into like the stockroom section, but they realize like this isn't going to hold for long, and they decide, you know, all right, ladies, you're going to escape through this air vent and get to the parking garage. Well, they plan to all escape through the air vent and get down to the parking garage and get out. But after the three girls get in, the robots bust through the door and the guys have to go running off into the mall in another direction.
Well, and here's the thing going back to these killbots, right? They're in like a warehouse or something, stockroom or something with a heavy door. It's like a heavy metal door. So they figure, okay, we should be fine from their lasers or whatever. But apparently, now they don't know this because they're on the other side of the wall, but the robots also have plastic explosive applicators for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you that the electronics have made them go haywire, but why do they have plastic explosive applicators? Like, I'll even give you that their lasers are supposed to just stun, but after, like, science and, you know, after movie science, now they're, like, hyped up lasers that can do damage. Okay. All right. Then why do they have plastic explosives?
I am 90% sure that there was a cutscene, like I said, that these were built for combat, and for some reason, like, they always leave these things like, okay, we're not having them for, well, maybe we should remove the plastic explosives and the death rays. Nah, we'll just deactivate them. It's like one of the it's that move, Red Planet with Val Kilmer, that's all about them being chased by a robot that has accidentally been switched to evil.
Yes, basically. Yes.
It was a switch.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, maybe you should have deactivated the killing program entirely and not just, oh, we'll put a switch between kill us and won't kill us.
I mean, I guess I can kind of, like, I do some programming. So I guess I kind of see what it's like when you're digging back into code. Hell, if you wrote it, much less if someone else did it, it's like, man, I don't want to change anything because I don't know what's going to break. I'm just going
to
leave it there.
Again, it's one thing to not take out the code. But you can still, like, let's not arm them with the plastic explosive.
Right, let's take that out of the assembly process.
Regardless, the three girls are trying to escape through the air vent, and the guys go running off into the mall, and our hero guy announces, and, you know, I've seen this movie a couple of dozen times. I really enjoy it. It's very fast-paced, and the reason I don't remember any of their names is because it's not important.
No.
It really is. You know, I know the most of the actors and actresses' name, but the character's name, whatever.
This is purely for fun. Yeah. This is entirely just like to enjoy 76 minutes of your time.
The married guy is like, okay, we got to figure out some way to arm ourselves. Is there a gun store somewhere in the mall? Yeah. And the two guys who work in the mall immediately say, Peckinpahs.
That's a great name.
So again,
good homage.
Another
great name.
Homage to, you know, yep. the great director Sam Peckinpah and his love of violence in movies. That's where they go get the guns to fight off the robots. And they even kind of know, like, right off that, like, it's going to take more than weaponry. One guy grabs a shotgun, one grabs an M16. Tony O'Dell grabs a revolver, and they even say, like, do you know how to use that? It's like, I've seen Dirty Harry 14 times. I know what I'm doing.
Right.
But they also grab propane tanks, knowing we're probably going to need some explosive applications here. And the three of them manage to take out one of the robots, blow it up using the propane tanks and the guns. The girls, while they're moving through, or I should say the ladies, while they're moving through the air ducts, Barbara Crampton's character starts getting either claustrophobic or, you know, anxiety. She's obviously, she keeps saying, like, she wants to check on her boyfriend. We should go help them. But you can tell she's having problems.
She's panicking.
Being
yeah.
in this. Yes. And these are probably more realistic sized air vents than you normally see in the movies. Mm-hmm. The much tighter, not quite as tight as the pipe that Bishop has to go through.
That still gives me nightmares.
Do the uplink in Aliens. But I wouldn't be comfortable in there either. But knowing it's crawl through this and get to safety or go battle killer robots, I think I'd be able to do it.
If I wasn't the size I am, I think I'd be okay.
Oh, well, the size I am, I ain't fitting in those hands.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like I like to think I would be okay, but I'd also be terrified that I was going to come crashing through the floor at any moment, or through the roof, rather, at any moment.
Yes. So she insists on leaving, and so the other two girls follow her out, and almost immediately, like, they meet up with the guys because they hear the explosion, so they go running to where they heard the explosion from, and they come under attack by the other two robots, and Barbara Crampton is lasered down.
Oh, just to mention, the robots, the few words they speak apparently are done by the director, Jim Wynorski.
Yes.
That's Jim Wynorski doing the voices.
Which is, you know, it is electronic,
yeah,
giving an electronic sound to it. So she's killed, and now the five remaining go running off into a store to try to hide. And here's another interesting aspect of the movie is the boyfriend, the guy playing the boyfriend of Barbara Crampton, is genuinely upset about, and that's, again, why I want to say these are probably more college students than teenage characters. Because he's like, why didn't you guys stay in the air vents? And they were like, look, she insisted on leaving and we couldn't. Well, you should have made her stay.
Right.
And it's not over the top like a lot of, and again, like a lot of movies would do, and it would turn into a big argument,
right,
and hostility. No, he's doing this because he's genuinely upset. And when the other guys jump in to defend the ladies and say, look, they did what they could, even he's like, you're right. You know, I'm upset, and they kind of bring it back down. Like, we're all in the situation. We got to work together, or we're not gonna make it.
Right. The movie keeps its focus, which is nice.
It makes these characters likable, and you want to root for
exactly.
them, which is a
without
mistake.
Overdoing
so
it.
Many movies exactly like this make. Because they make you hate these characters, and you're waiting for them to get killed.
Right, because these characters genuinely like each other. They're not like,
yes.
yeah. It's not portrayed like it is, like you're saying, in a lot of these movies where it's like, even if they're in a relationship, one of them is usually a monster, you know?
Yeah, and it's what, you know, actually, you know, his grief is what actually leads to him being the next character killed.
Yeah.
Because Tony O'Dell remembers, look, up on the third floor is the master control room. That's where the computer that runs these robots is operating from. If we can get up there, we shut down the computer, we shut down the robots. Because as we should have pointed out earlier, the time period for them to get out of the mall has ended.
Yeah.
And they show all these, like, blast doors,
yeah,
basically.
Like it's NORAD,
you know,
yeah.
Shutting and,
yeah,
and locking them in the mall.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's either hide, fight, or die. So they make the decision, all right, you know what? We took out one of the robots. We're going to make it to – there's only three. We took out one. Let's get up to that control room and shut down the other one. And the guy playing Barbara Crampton's boyfriend starts rushing ahead. And they're like, no, we got to stick together. He's like, no, we got to hurry. We got to show these, you know, things. We mean business. He wants revenge. And unfortunately, since he separates from the group, he doesn't see one of the robots come up behind him, and it kills him. So now they're in combat with this robot, and there's another robot starts coming up behind them, and they come up with another plan where our hero, the guy who isn't Tony Odell, left, plays bait. And they come up with a plan to blow up one of the robots by trapping it in the elevator. And he runs into the elevator you will have seen in Commando.
Yep.
Climbs up on top of it, lures the robot in, traps it in there, and then he plants a bunch of propane tanks on top, and he goes jumping off, you know, nice action hero move, and the rest of them open fire on the propane tanks, and Kelly Maroney shows, much like she did in Night of the Comet, you give her a firearm, she knows what to do with
it. Yeah, it's a good shot.
Because it's her shot that blows up the propane tank and takes out the elevator and the robot with it. So now knowing they're up against only one robot, which we will later find out they didn't actually get this robot.
Right.
They start heading back towards the control room to try again, once again, try to shut down the computer system. They get attacked again. This is a very quick movie. You know, it's short, it's action packed, it keeps moving. And
yeah, it's not like the little the breaks in between action sequences are not very long. It's a short conversation about their situation, and then, you know, the robots more or less show up, or they realize that they're trapped and have to move somewhere, and the robots show up. But yeah, it's rapid pace.
The married couple are both killed. Now, this is one of, again, it's this. She should have been undercover. The thing was shooting at her, and she stands in the open and gets shot by the thing.
She just stops.
Really, yeah. I don't like to do victim blaming in a lot of these movies, but unlike all the others who kind of, you know, weren't expecting it, she should have known, because Tony Odell and Kelly Maroney both die for cover, and she stands there for a good 5 seconds as the lasers are being shot at, because they've got it kind of electrocuted and spinning around.
They've messed it up, and it's just like flailing wildly and blasting in every possible direction. It's like, yeah, duck.
Duck. Her being killed sets the husband off onto a suicide. You know, he gets into a little
rage.
He jumps into like a little forklift machine and rams the robot, killing him and destroying the robot. So now it's down to Kelly Maroney and Tony Odell trying to get away from and destroy the final robot. And after another little action sequence, Tony Odell is taken out, and now it's just our final girl, Kelly Maroney, taking on the last robot. And she does a spectacular job of taking, she lures it into the paint store with all these flammable paints, and she gets herself a flare. And even before this, she's doing all this great, you know, like, it's coming after her, and she'll, like, she kind of, you know, it's a multi-level mall, so she'll, like, go over the balcony and kind of hang there so that the robot will go past and miss her. And it works a couple of times, but, like, she ends up falling 3 stories, but she ends up going to land on like a kiosk that has like an awning over it that kind of breaks her fall, but she's still like horribly injured.
Well, she's also like one of the at least at this point, finally smart enough, she's like, stay low. Like, the robots have a somewhat limited sight, you know.
Yeah.
So she finally is just like, what if we just stay out of their range, you know?
She lures the final robot into the paint store, like she was said, knocks down all like the paint buckets all over it, you know, to give herself a nice base. escapes the store, hurls the flare into the store, and blows up the final robot. And just to give us a little bit more of a happy ending, as she's limping away, we see Tony O'Dell isn't dead. He was just knocked unconscious. He's kind of holding, you know, a little rack to his head. And the movie ends with the two of them kissing and surviving. It's a very fun, because this movie is more fun than it is scary.
Sure. Yeah. It's the later 80s slasher where they were taking themselves less seriously and more just like, here's what you want to see.
But, you know, I would say this is more action than even horror.
Agreed. Yep.
And again, it's kind of why the title Shopping Mall doesn't quite fit. And you'll see, I'll be putting like the posters up on Instagram. And I mean, you've probably seen the poster of like the robotic hand holding the shopping bag and the shopping bunch towards, so you can kind of see like there's body parts in it. It's not a very fitting poster either.
No.
Again, it's, as we will, when we get to the segment of the show, it's very exploitive and it's going to get you to watch it. But the movie is good enough in what it is that it could have just been honest. Although, again, you never know with some of these movies. You never know how the marketing is going to go and whether, because so many great movies are missed out on when they're in the theater and don't get their, you know, recognition until sometimes a decade later.
Well, I think if it came out a bit closer to either Terminator or Terminator 2, instead of being right in the middle, it probably stays with Killbots, you know, and goes for that layer of exploitation. But instead, I think we're in, again, like the Halloween 5 or 4, Friday the 13th part 5 or 6, Nightmare on Elm Street, I guess 2 or 3. Sort of era. So I suppose that's why they made that sort of like tweak to Hollywood marketing.
I think this movie was really trying to capitalize on both Short Circuit and Deadly Friend.
Deadly Friend, I forgot about, yeah.
The Wes Craven movie.
Sure, yeah. So, good movie, but I completely forgot about that movie.
Highlight the robots.
Yeah.
It's a super fun movie. It's super quick. Like if you've got less than an hour and a half to watch something, I'm not just saying like, well, you should watch this because
it's short. Watch it because it's short.
Yeah. But
that would be on our special edition recut of the movie. That would be the blurb. Watch it because it's short.
But it's so fast paced and over before you know it. It is just, you know, pure entertainment from start to finish.
Yep.
And even like just the parts of Paul Bartlett and Mary Warrenoff sitting there commenting,
making eyes at each other, rolling their eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, extremely entertaining. There isn't a part of this movie that doesn't have something going for it. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. Maybe more stuff that would have cost an awful lot more money, but I'm not sure what else they could have added to pad it out. So I'm kind of interested in seeing exactly what that longer cut is.
I mean, I'm sure it's more about the building of the robots. There might be a bit more character building because there's a scene early on, again, before they have the party, where John Chalesky's character is meeting up with Susie Slater's character and talking about how they're going to meet later tonight. And then her stern father pops in
right, to
be all like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I meant later tonight when I drop her off at her friend's house for that sleepover she's had. You know, it's one of those typical, you know, stern father meets the boyfriend he don't like scenes. But that character is only in that brief little scene. I wouldn't be surprised if there was more of him that was cut out from the movie.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, is there a longer cut? Like, is it available?
There's according to Vestron Video has a Blu-ray that says it's a 129-minute cut.
Okay.
So, that's at least another that's another 13 minutes.
Yeah, that would make it a good solid
quite
ending.
A few scenes they could have there. But again, the quick pace of this movie has a lot going for it too. I mean, the fact that
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if adding 13 more minutes necessarily helps the movie. So it's probably just as well. But I would have to see the extra footage to see. Like, did this really add anything? Did it matter?
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people prefer the extended cut of Aliens to the theatrical cut, which actually I should also say the reason it's called extended cut and not director's cut is because the theatrical version is the director's cut. That is James Cameron's preferred version of the movie. And the add-ons are usually only well received by the fans of the movie who've seen the movie a bunch of times
and want to see something
more. Enjoy seeing these new scenes. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if the extended cut of Chopping Mall isn't paced as well.
Right.
And people might, whereas this is what's, this cut is what sells the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's exactly, yeah. Like, I'm interested. I'm interested, but I suspect I'll prefer the theatrical cut.
Maybe. All right. You got anything else to say about the movie? I mean, it's a quick movie. That's why we can't really go too much into it. It is, it does what it does well.
Right.
It moves at a super rapid pace. And as we just discussed, there's really no scenes that you could be like, well, this could have been cut shorter. It could have been no.
Sure. It's
everything is there, holding it up.
No, I mean, it's not a movie that's heavily quotable. Most of it is really visual. So hard to go through with a not visual medium like a podcast. So you really do have to see it. Hopefully you've set up your expectations enough to do that.
There are all the cool homages and little Easter eggs. Like there's a scene where Kelly Maroney runs into a pet store to hide out from one of the robots, and the pet store is called Roger's Little Shop of Pets.
Yeah, exactly.
And as we said, the gun store where they arm themselves is called Peckinpah's. And this horror and sci-fi fans will enjoy the movie as much for what's going on as all these neat little Easter eggs that they can pick up on.
There's also, and I can't figure out what the connection is. And maybe I'm wrong in assuming the connection, but there's a Crush Groove kiosk. I assume in reference to the movie, but the movie was years earlier. As far as I know, it has nothing to do with this movie or Roger Corman. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what that was, but it seemed deliberate.
I bet you there was a lot of other shops that they probably ran by. We weren't paying attention to. And again, that's just to encourage more people to watch the movie to look in the background and see what other things they pick up on that we miss.
Right.
But unless you've got anything else to say about the movie, I guess we can move on to recommendations, which we kind of already covered.
At least one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least one of them. The Class of 1999 is to me at least the one that immediately came to mind. But I also like, I like to go, the two others that I would recommend are later in the Friday the 13th franchise, Part 6, which is, I think, the most fun of the earlier, like, Friday the 13th, still titled Friday the 13th movies. Part 4 as well, but Part 4, I'm going with Part 6 on this one, because I just think that's the more, like, fun of them. That's like my favorite one, definitely past Part 4. And also the underrated Part 9, which is a hell of a lot of fun. Jason Goes to Hell. That movie is great.
Yeah, I think that movie gets a bad rap, too.
I don't know why. It's so much fun. Part 9 is so much fun. Jason Goes to Hell, rather, is so much fun.
If you grew up in that era, people were complaining, oh, it's the same thing. Jason shows up in his hockey mask and kills everybody. So they do something different,
right?
And everybody complains. Well, I expected Jason to be wearing his hockey mask going
exactly.
around killing everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Like what I appreciate about that's exactly. That's what I appreciate about part nine is they did do something different because you had to. Like, how many times could you rehash the same thing over and over again? Which they more or less did in part six, but I think they did a good job of it, of still making that a lot of fun. And then, yeah, like part nine, just what they tried to do with it. I was all in, man. I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to second Class of 1999, which we've covered on this podcast. And another movie we've covered on this podcast that we mentioned, Night of the Comet, yep. Starring Kelly Maroney herself. And then, you know, kind of, we mentioned the dialects, the Doctor Who and the Daleks, starring the always fantastic
yes.
Peter Cushing, and its sequel, which we found was even better
yes.
than the Doctor Who and the Daleks. Daleks Invasion Earth 2051.
If you're a Doctor Who fan, and
or 2151.
If you're a Doctor Who fan and have been holding off on Doctor Who and the Daleks, don't. It's very good. It's basically Doctor Who. Like, for whatever reason, they don't make him a Time Lord. But
well,
it's otherwise basically Doctor Who. It's good. But Doctor Who, the Daleks Invasion 2150 AD is really good.
I'm gonna say the opposite. Because I'm thinking diehard Doctor Who fans will probably find less to like.
Mm.
Whereas this is probably an introduction. If you've never watched Doctor Who and you've been intimidated, check out these two movies. And if you enjoy them, see if you can get yourself into the series.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm interested in knowing your opinion either way. But I mean, I thought they were good. I thought they were both good. I was surprised at how much, I guess I was, I don't know if I should have been, but I was surprised at how much I did like Doctor Who and the Daleks. But I did feel like it was kind of slow. At times, it took a little bit to get going, but then Invasion Earth was just really good. That's just a good movie. Really good special effects too.
Yeah, I mean they're 60, so they've got the they're definitely a throwback. Some of the sets as they're running through the sets, you almost expect to see them running past Austin Powers
yes.
running in the other direction or something.
It's very colorful too.
Yeah.
Hurry
up! We're filming a James Bond in a few minutes. Let's go. We gotta
right.
Get these sets clear.
The Prisoner. You expect to see like the rover bouncing around behind. And
yeah.
Peter Cushing's an excellent Doctor Who. I think he does a very good characterization of Doctor Who. Or a version of Doctor Who.
Right. Right. All right. Now, like. This is kind of a tough one. We've added where we try to make the movie sell it more exploitive. But when you've got a movie, you know, especially a Roger Corman movie, that entire intention is to be exploitive.
Exactly.
And has an exploitive title like Chopping Mall.
Or even Killbots, for that matter.
More exploitive? Yeah. Well, I found a way to go for more exploitation and still be honest to what the movie shows. And I went with Shopping Mall Sex Party Massacre.
Okay. Okay. That does take it up a bit and is accurate.
Yeah.
I went a different way because I basically had the same thought. I'm like, it's already a Roger Corman movie. It's already called Shopping Mall, or alternatively, Killbots, and is effectively an exploitation movie to begin with. So I went a different way. I went with a different kind of exploitation. So I got a little bit of a preamble, so it makes sense. So this would be me selling it to a different audience. From the producers of Crazy Mama, Boxcar Bertha, Night Call Nurses, and Candy Stripe Nurses comes a delightful coming-of-age romance at a beautiful city mall. A group of young adults are looking for love and life and a break from the rigors of balancing their job with school. Their relationships will be tested as they fight their feelings and desires while playing an overnight party in a mall after closing hours. Locked in a battle of hijinks with security, they're in for a long night of tension and romance. Come see the sparks fly in a love story like you've never seen before, a life-changing and mind-blowing experience they'll never forget. Will they ever understand each other? Will their love survive the night? Please watch Shopping for Love.
I love it. It's especially seeing the sparks fly, because sparks literally fly during this movie.
Yep.
Well done. Well done. All right. Well, again, we just want to really encourage you to check out this movie because everything it does exceptionally well.
Yeah.
The cast is all good. The effects are really top notch. This is just a really, really fun movie you should check out.
Yeah, like what I do appreciate about it, and it sounds so simple, but there are movies who do screw this up. It lays its cards on the table and then plays them exactly what the way you would expect, you know, which is not to say that it's formulaic or anything. And I guess in a way it is, but it's just like, it's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then you do it, which sounds simple, but there are movies that do screw that up. There are movies that where you think, oh, okay, fine. This is going to be the thing we've all been waiting for. And then they completely throw you a curveball. And it's like, nope, that's not what this movie is at all.
Yeah, and like I said, when they don't make the characters likable,
yeah,
you're not, you know, you're just kind of like waiting, like, all right, well, when are these robots, especially when they make the characters hateable.
Right, and that's, to me, that was the biggest problem I had with some of the later slashers was just, but it's also like, I get it, because like, you're in it for the kills at this point, and, you know, killing off likable people has its own different things, so like, I sort of get it, you know, kind of rooting for the hateable ones to get off after a while, but no, this one doesn't do that.
No. All right, so our last, you know, segment, as always, is the Magnificent 7 Degrees, where we connect this movie to my favorite movie, The Magnificent Seven, through 7 steps or less. Okay. Do you have one?
I do. Man, there's actually a lot of ways we could have gone with this, but I'm going this way. So Mary Waranov. Obviously in Chopping Mall, as we mentioned before, she's also in Night of the Comet, which we've talked about before, and I'm going through Jeffrey Lewis because I just love Jeffrey Lewis. I love his movies, consummate character actor, or just actor in general. And it seems like I love just about anything he's in it. And if I can just sidetrack for a minute with Jeffrey Lewis, I went through some of his filmography. This guy's been in just about everything with everyone. I mean, he's started movies with several movies, actually, with Clint Eastwood. He was in Dillinger with Warren Oates. He's been in movies with both Terrence Hill and Henry Fonda, Robert Redford, Sean Connery, Brian Keith, Steve McQueen. And by the way, I could just do that. I could just say he was in Tom Horn with Steve McQueen, but that would be even more cheating than I would normally do because I didn't even know that movie existed. I just thought I was trying to figure out like what he starred in with other people. He was even in Heaven's Gate. Right. So Christopher Walken and Kris Kristofferson, not to mention the wide cast that was in that. He was in 10 to Midnight with Charles Bronson, which we've covered, and I could have stopped there. He's been in movies with Jean-Claude Van Damme, Pierce Brosnan, Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster, James Garner, James Caan, and even Benicio del Toro. And then as far as TV, I mean, if it was on in the 70s, it seems like he was in it. He was in episodes of The Waltons, Harry O, Hawaii 5-0, Starsky and Hutch, Lou Grant, Flo, Barnaby Jones. And then later on, he was in MacGyver, X-Files, Titus. Remember Titus? That was a great show with Stacey Keach. And even episode of House. So, RIP again, Jeffrey Lewis, I love your stuff. But back to the Magnificent Seven thing. So Jeffrey Lewis was in Tango and Cash with Jack Palance. And the only reason I picked that was so I could talk for a second about Attack, which we watched recently, which was a fantastic war movie. Really one of my favorites already. So if you have a chance to see Attack, it's literally just Attack with an exclamation point. That's fantastic. And in that was Eddie Albert playing the captain, and he was fantastic. I mean, everybody was fantastic in it too, but we're going with Eddie Albert as the captain, who was in Airport 79 with Sybil Danning, who was in Battle Beyond the Stars with Robert Vaughn, who was in The Magnificent.
Okay. I think we went all the way around the world with that one.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it a bit more simple. I picked, because, I mean, you could have started with either Mary Waranoff or Kelly Maroney since they were both in Night of the Comet.
Sure.
But I went with Tony O'Dell, who was, as we mentioned, in Head of the Class with Howard Hessman. Howard Hessman was in Clue with Tim Curry.
Yes.
Tim Curry was in Legend with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise was in The Color of Money with Paul Newman, who was in The Towering Inferno with Steve McQueen.
Right on. I almost went.
Although you got to McQueen quicker than I did.
Well, I mean, I could have, but I didn't. But it's just that's probably one I'll keep in the back of my mind, I guess. I almost ended up as it's interesting. I almost ended up with Towering Inferno as well. But I was gonna get there with, and I decided not to, but I was gonna go with Eddie Albert in The High Cost of Living with Dabney Coleman, who was in Towering Inferno.
All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. And hey, we actually kept it shorter than the movie.
Oh, we did? Okay, I was curious how that was going to work out.
I want to remind everybody that they can follow us on Instagram, X/Twitter, Blue Sky, which is now fully open to everybody, Threads, if you want to see what we review some movies on Facebook, you can check out the Movie Asylum of the Weird, Bad, and Wonderful, where I have my other identity of Marcus Sorois, who's much more snarky and cynical about movies. It's one of the reasons I go by Marcus. And especially on Letterboxd, if you want to see, what we've been watching, what we're up to, we star review some movies there as well. Those are some places to check us out. With as always, we want to thank you for listening and hope to have you back next time.
Thank you, everyone.
Oh, I should have mentioned, as always, you find us at those on those platforms at Movie Matt Sorois, all one word, MovieMattSorois. Good night, everybody, and stay gold, people.